Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday. It's April 29th. Currently, we've got 39 degrees here in Old Town Park City with some rain clouds. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Monday to you. As we begin this work week, we're going to be slightly unsettled across the northern half of the state, and that's thanks to two relatively weak systems that are going to be moving through. But it will result in a chance for showers both today and mainly on Wednesday as we go throughout this week. And we'll also see our temperatures kind of go on a downward trend as we go through the next couple of days, thanks to those systems clipping the northern half of the state. But I think today we'll come in with a temperature maybe around and slightly above average throughout the Wasatch back. We'll climb to 57 degrees in Park City, while we'll get into the 60s down in the Heber Valley. We'll mainly check in with partly cloudy skies through the day, but as we're seeing this morning, and as we'll see later today, there will be at least a chance for a few spotty showers, and I wouldn't be surprised by later this afternoon to this evening, we could hear a few rumbles of thunder. During the daytime hours, roughly a 40% chance of showers. That chance might uptick slightly as we move into this evening, because that's when the weak front that we're going to see today slides through. So we could see that percentage go up to maybe 70 to 80% chance once we get past sundown through around midnight tonight. But with the temperature eventually dropping to the upper 20s tonight in Park City, if the moisture does hold on long enough, there is a chance that we could see our rain transition over to snow. By no means a guarantee, but that potential can't be completely ruled out. So definitely a change of pace from what we're going to see this afternoon, the upper 50s in Park City and dropping into the upper 20s tonight. I think past midnight tonight, we'll be looking at mostly dry conditions, or at least the chance of wet weather will gradually be going down. For our Tuesday, it's mostly sunny skies, and with that front moving through, we'll be a little bit cooler tomorrow. We'll see a daytime high right around 50 degrees in Park City. Then we'll drop to around freezing on Tuesday night with the overnight low of 32. And then with that second system moving through on Wednesday, roughly a 1 in 3 chance of showers with an even cooler daytime high. We'll top out right around 43 degrees in Park City. So there's a decent chance that we could see snow, but not expecting anything too significant. But if we do see the wet weather during the heart of the afternoon, there's a chance that we could see a rain and snow mix. By Wednesday night, it's partly cloudy skies, the overnight low dropping at 24 degrees, so pretty chilly. Then on Thursday, it's a mix of sun and clouds at the daytime high of 45 and dropping back to around freezing on Thursday night. By the time we move into the end of the work week and into this upcoming weekend, high pressure will finally begin to build in, and our temperatures will be going on a warming trend once again. We should be back in the middle 50s on Friday, should see daytime high right around 60 degrees on Saturday, and we'll see a daytime high stick around in the low 60s through Sunday, and by Sunday, maybe a slight chance for a few pop-up showers and a few rumbles of thunder. So the Utah spring weather roller coaster does continue. We're kind of back at the top. We'll ease down, but nothing too significant through the middle of the week, and then those temperatures will start to climb once again to round out the week, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be talking with Park City Winter Sports School head of school, Tess Minafero. She has details about the opening of the charter school last week. Timpanogos Valley Theater director of The Nerd, a comedy by Larry Hsu, Robin Lane, joins us. The production plays Monday, Fridays, and Saturdays through May 11th. And musician Josh Kelly, joined by board members of Friends of Summit County Search and Rescue, Michelle Eastman, along with Scott Wolf, who will have details on their upcoming fundraiser. Taking a look at some local news now, Hazardous Waste Day was Saturday, and some 500 Summit County residents participated. KPCW's Christine Weller was there and has details.
Recycle Utah and Park City Sunrise Rotary host Hazardous Waste Day twice a year. The free event allows all Summit County residents to drop off items like paint and motor oil to keep toxic chemicals and heavy metals out of landfills. Recycle Utah Executive Director Carolyn Wara said hazardous chemicals and metals shouldn't go in landfills because they leach toxins into the ground and drinking water and contaminate it.
This is like the nastiest stuff. You know, you put like a quart of oil in the water and it contaminates, you know, 83 dumpsters of water.
On Saturday, Sunrise Rotary and Recycle Utah volunteers collected hazardous materials like paints, motor oil, batteries, gasoline, household cleaners, fertilizers, pharmaceuticals, and electronic waste from about 500 vehicles. Scott Van Hartesveld, a Sunrise Rotary member, said volunteers collected thousands of pounds of garbage.
It is really humbling to see the amount that comes through on any particular day when we're doing this.
In 2023, the 2 days of waste collection yielded 35,000 pounds of paint, over 1,700 pounds of batteries, 93 pounds of light bulbs, 1,100 pounds of household cleaners, and 188 pounds of pharmaceuticals. Wara said about half of the waste they collect is incinerated, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency regulates incineration. Other hazardous waste can be reused or repurposed. For example, all collected oil can be reused, and bicycles will be refurbished or broken down into parts through the Bicycle Collective. Mattresses were collected for $20 each to be repurposed by a company called Springback Utah. Jeff Jewett from Springback said the company deconstructs mattresses layer by layer to recycle them. The foam part of a mattress is used to make carpet pads.
So if you've ever seen your carpet pad, looks like a bunch of different types of foam. That's why it's made with recycled foam primarily. All the metal, the springs and coils in mattresses and box springs is made into rebar. It goes right back into our Utah road construction.
Wara said the event usually costs around $30,000, as toxic waste is expensive to dispose of. However, donations and Recycle Utah partners like Park City Municipal, Summit County, and Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District help cover costs. Volunteers also make the event possible. The next Hazardous Waste Day, where Summit County residents can dispose of toxic waste for free, is September 28th. Locals can also go to the Summit County landfill to dispose of hazardous waste. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Park City's Winter Sports School opened for its school year last week. In the studio with details, I have the head of school, Tess Minor-Ferrer. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe just start by telling us what the Winter Sports School is.
Sure. Yeah, we are a public charter school that serves high school students 9 through 12, designed intentionally to meet the needs of student athletes who are training and competing in a whole manner of sports, mostly winter sports, but not all.
Yeah. Now, if these kids were in public school with a normal school calendar, would they be 5 months ahead of their grade or 7 months behind?
5 months ahead, typically.
Yeah. Okay. How many students do you have enrolled?
We have 110 that we're starting with this year.
Yeah. And capacity for how many?
120, although we are chartered for much more than that, but our space really limits our ability to enroll more than about 30 per grade.
All right. And is that where you kind of keep it at, 30 per grade, just because of the teaching ratios?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the space. Particularly, we offer one class per grade, so we're not going to put more than 30 students in a biology class, let's say.
Right. And then how many teachers do you have?
There are 15 staff, and almost all of us teach something as part of our job descriptions.
All right. So there is room for 10 more, at least at this point?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. We are full, actually, at all grades except for ninth grade.
Okay. And then what does it cost to attend?
Nothing. For Utah resident students, there is no tuition. We are a public school.
Mm-hmm. What if somebody was coming from out of state?
We do have tuition-paying students that come from out of state and pay tuition of about $17,800.
All right. And how many of those do you have?
This year, I think we actually have four.
Oh, okay. So they're serious about their sport.
Yeah. Typically, it's students who've not found a solution that works for them elsewhere, or they're often coming to train with the high-quality clubs here in Utah, and we provide the academic support to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what does a typical day look like for a winter sports school student?
It actually looks very similar to your average public high school. We run from 8 to 3. We've got four academic classes that meet every day. There's a homeroom and a lunch break. But our classes meet every single day rather than on any kind of rotating schedule.
All right. And basically just the basics? Reading, writing, and arithmetic?
Well, yes. Because we're a public charter school in Utah, we meet all of the Utah requirements for a high school diploma. And we do focus on college prep. And so our students are really focused on the core areas, yes, but also do get arts and CTE courses, and they actually earn all of their PE credit by virtue of the training and competing they do outside of school.
So you've got, do you have like a foreign language classes as well?
We do. We offer Spanish, 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm. And then you do have art classes?
Yeah, it's a requirement as part of Utah high school diploma requirements, but also we've had offered arts at Winter Sports School since its inception.
And I know some students do go to the high school to take what?
Well, typically it's actually to participate in extracurricular activities, right? So they are competing with the high school football and baseball, soccer, lacrosse teams. So that's more often where they are sort of dual enrolled, or not dual enrolled, but participating at the high school. But sometimes they'll go look for something that we cannot offer, in particular AP courses, to be able to enroll at the high school part-time.
All right, so you do have kids going to the high school for those AP classes, and they would take those, what, in the fall semester?
The entirety of a typical high school year, they would continue to pursue that course even when they're not in school with us.
All right. So do students have to be part of a winter sport, or could they just decide they love skiing so much that they would just come to the winter sports school?
It's a little bit of both. Our students, because we're a public charter school, we're a school of choice. If we have space available and a student wants to attend, we offer that space. Having said that, because we have additional graduation requirements at winter sports school for a minimum of 1,000 hours of training competing with a sport club that's affiliated with a national governing body or international governing body of sport, our students need to really still be mission appropriate in order to be successful and graduate with a winter sports school diploma.
Yeah, how would you can break it down in terms of sport?
We are typically, and this year absolutely, about 40% alpine ski racers. Not quite half our population, but often close to that. And then another third really are in those free ski disciplines. If we add in the other freestyle disciplines, aerials, moguls, and snowboarders, then they do rival the alpine ski racers in numbers. And then this year we have 11 different sports represented, and that does include telemark skiing, ski jumping, freestyle aerials, cross-country skiers, and a surfer, actually.
Okay, takes winters off to go North Shore or something.
That's right.
And then what about gender? Is it balanced?
We are more of a 60-40 male-female split typically at school, and I'd say this year we're just about there as well.
Yeah. Hard to believe that this is the 31st year already. When I saw that, it was like, wow, I remember when it started, way back when. Who are some of your most successful graduates? I mean, do you kind of have like a hall of fame?
Yes, we do. Actually, in our new building, and by new, I mean 10 years old now, but when we moved in, there was a hall of fame sort of created with names like Steve Holcomb and Josh Christensen and Andrew Weibrecht and Sarah Hendrickson, all of those sorts of folks. Ted Ligety is among one of our most successful grads. Since then, we've added another, I think it's 11 Olympians, and currently we have 24 former Winter Sports School grads from 2014 and on, who are currently on national teams, mostly U.S. Ski and Snowboard.
Wow. So do you kind of rival those famous, you know, the Green Valley or Grass Valley, you know, from back east?
We do, in the sense that we've got athletes that are achieving at the highest levels in numbers that I think certainly rival those East Coast ski academies. We do offer a different model entirely, you know, and because we focus on academics, we focus on getting these students the preparation they need to make that next step, whatever that might be. Those East Coast academies in particular combine both sports, programming, and academics. We leave that job to the experts here in the high quality clubs that are in town.
Yeah, so do graduates go on to college, or do they tend to stick with their sport?
I would say 90% of them go on to college right after graduation, or at least within 1 or 2 years if they take a gap year. Our students are currently studying or on their way to places like Stanford and UCLA and Cal Poly and Harvard and Dartmouth and Montana State and Denver, and I mean, you name it. We've got students in the last even 5 or 6 years heading off to the best colleges in the country.
And to play or be part of their sport as well?
It's both, right? We do, we have students that are competing in NCAA Division I across the board, but also students for whom the sport provides additional leverage, frankly, to be able to get into some of those top colleges. And some who have enjoyed their sport all through high school and are ready to move on and pursue academics at a high level.
All right. You are underway with a capital campaign looking to expand the school again. Would this be the final expansion that you have room for?
Yes, absolutely, on our current site. Yeah, we're looking to add another sort of 8,700 square feet, but most importantly, spaces that are dedicated for purposes rather than having to share spaces the way we do right now. So a science lab and an outdoor amphitheater where we can all gather, because currently we have no space large enough to gather the entire school.
All right, and then that would allow you to add how many more students?
We're chartered for up to 200, but we see our ideal size at somewhere between 145 and 160 max. We'd like to get to offering two classes per grade at every level and bring class sizes in more in the sort of 18 to 22 range.
Yeah, what is it now?
Well, it can be as much as 30, but typically on average it's about 22.
Yeah. So where are you at with that fundraising then?
It's a $5 million campaign, and we've raised 2.8. So we've got a bit more to go, but with another 1.2, we would be able to start our building and get it underway.
Well, how does the financing then work for our charter school? I mean, we've got, you know, Park City School District as an example, right? They collect property taxes, right? So they've got money to build capital projects. You don't get that?
Correct. We do not. Charter schools do not get direct property tax support. We do receive what's called the charter local replacement funding from the state, and so there is some of that property tax that's collected and redistributed to charter schools. But for us, as a board of trustees, we've committed to not borrowing additional funds to be able to build. Instead, to make sure that we raise enough so that we can build and sustain this growth long term and still maintain a healthy financial situation to expand programming alongside.
Yeah, you do receive the what's called the weighted pupil unit.
Yes, absolutely.
For each student.
Absolutely,
right?
Yep.
And that basically pays your salary and the staff salaries, and that's about it?
A little bit more than that, but not that much, yes. Right, of course, the greatest expense is staffing, right, for any school. And we, like lots of small schools in Utah, we struggle with the economies of scale, right, or the lack thereof. And so, we do think public funding will support our programming. On top of that, we do not want to borrow additional money for building. So we want to make sure that we can build and keep our funding, our state funding, for programming for our students.
Yeah, so how soon do you think you can build? I mean, how long has it taken you to raise the 2.8?
Sure. It has taken a long time to raise the 2.8 because we actually started this campaign before my time at the school thinking. And actually, what we've already raised enabled us to expand the existing building and use the upstairs spaces just before I came. But our hope is that we're able to get to the finish line in this calendar year and start building with a hope of having much of it in place, if not all usable, by the next school year.
Oh, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. So
it's ambitious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, what are you doing? Are you just going out to alumni or?
Alumni, foundations, businesses, our current community as well. So, I mean, we're trying everything we can.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know?
No, I think that's just about it.
Too late to register for this year?
Actually, it is not. We typically have a handful of students that start with us in July after our spring semester is over and when they finish their school year at their local school.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, but they need to let you know that they're coming.
Absolutely, sure, yes. We still are accepting applications for the school year, mostly for ninth grade.
All right, wintersportschool.com.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Tess.
Thank you.
That's Tess Minor-Vera, again, head of school for the Park City Winter Sports School. Well, state transportation authorities are about to ramp up road work here in Summit County. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports work will be concentrated along Interstate 80.
The Utah Department of Transportation began restriping northern Utah highways last summer, and the work resumes this spring. The $26 million project creates black and white tiger tail striping that is both reflective and sunken down to avoid damage from snow plows. UDOT ultimately plans to install the striping on Interstate 80, the length of Parley's Canyon, but it's beginning with the section between Lamb's Canyon and U.S. Highway 40. There is not a set date to resume construction, but lane closures, detours, or new traffic patterns may be necessary. Farther up I-80, UDOT's hoping to install new wildlife fencing and overpasses. Spokesperson John Gleason says the agency's applying for two federal grants totaling $30 million.
And this is an area where we think that if we take action, we're going to be successful in reducing the number of vehicle wildlife collisions.
Matt Howard is UDOT's natural resources manager.
We have proposed two overpasses, potentially a third underpass, and then up to seven or eight existing crossings that we would fence to and potentially retrofit in small ways to create additional crossing points for animals. And that would be 21 total miles of fencing and infrastructure.
Both grants will be awarded later this year. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Wasatch Latino Coalition is hosting its second annual Dia de los Niños celebration in Heber on Saturday evening. Children's Day is an annual celebration in many Latino communities to honor kids and to promote their well-being. The coalition's president, Yuri Jensen, says that all children and their families were invited. They had fun activities for kids, a magician, bouncy houses, balloons, and face painting. Jensen says she hopes that more non-Latino families can take part in years to come and to get to know their Latino neighbors. Last year, the event drew some 650 kids. And Utah Republican and Democratic delegates cast ballots on Saturday to narrow the field of candidates for Utah's June primary election. GOP delegates chose Riverton Mayor Trent Staggs as their nominee to replace retiring Mitt Romney in the U.S. Senate. According to the Associated Press, Staggs secured nearly two-thirds of all delegate votes hours after he was endorsed by former President Donald Trump. But a blessing from the former president may not be enough to carry Staggs across the finish line in June. Current Congressional District 3 Representative John Curtis, former Utah House Speaker Brad Wilson, Jason Walton, and Brent Orrin Hatch will also be on the ballot. All four gathered enough signatures to qualify for the contest. The winner will proceed to the November general election to face Democrat Carolyn Gleick, a mountaineer and environmental activist who earned her party's nomination Saturday with support from 92% of the delegates. For Congressional District 1, representing portions of Summit County, Republican incumbent Blake Moore will face off against Ogden electrician Paul Miller. After two rounds of voting, Miller received 55% of the vote compared to Moore's 41%. The winner of the primary will go on to face the Democratic challenger, businessman Bill Campbell. It took six rounds of voting for delegates to nominate a candidate to replace Curtis, who gave up his seat to run for Senate. State Senator Mike Kennedy got the nod for the nomination, but still must square off with four others to make it to November. The primary winner will go on to face Park City resident and former Summit County Council member Glenn Wright in November. According to the AP, incumbent Utah Governor Spencer Cox was booed when he appeared on stage. He lost the delegate vote in the second round of voting to State Representative Phil Lyman, who received 68% of the vote compared to Cox's 33%. However, Cox gathered signatures and will appear on the June ballot. Brian King, who represents parts of Salt Lake City and Summit County in the Utah House, is the Democratic nominee for governor. In uncontested races, incumbent Republican State Senator John Johnson will face Democrat Stacey Bernal in Senate District 3, representing portions of northern Summit County. And incumbent Republican State Representative Mike Kohler will compete with Democrat Julie Monahan for House District 59, representing those living within Park City limits, city limits, and Wasatch County voters in November. Utah State Representative for District 4, representing portions of Summit County, incumbent Kara Birkeland also won the delegate vote on Saturday. Her opponent in November will be Park City resident and program director at Mountain Mediation Center, Chris Campbell. And in the state school board race for the Park City and Snyderville Basin Area, District 6, incumbent Carol Barlow-Lear is running unopposed. The Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce hosted its spring tourism mixer last Thursday. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about that.
Representatives from the Heber Valley's marketing, tourism, and hospitality industries gathered to learn more about how to best cater to tourists from around the globe. With Deer Valley Resort expanding in Wasatch County and the Olympics likely on the horizon for 2034, the Chamber says it is ramping up its efforts to welcome more international travelers to the Valley. Rachel Bremer of the Utah Office of Tourism manages international strategy for the state. She says building relationships with travel agents is key for increasing Heber's visibility.
More and more people in the U.S. want someone to customize and help them decide how to plan a vacation, plan a holiday, even here in the U.S. And in these international markets, it really exists.
And once guests from abroad arrive in Utah, Bremer says it's important to ensure they feel at home.
Think about, you know, what's going to make visitors welcomed. Visitors love to have a hot cup of tea. Do we have hot water readily available in the lobbies?
She also recommends going the extra mile to recommend local attractions and sharing information about best practices for tipping and other cultural nuances. Heber Valley Chamber Executive Director Dallin Kocher says he thinks Heber has a unique opportunity to win the hearts of international visitors.
I got to spend some time in Europe this summer, and my favorite part about the whole trip wasn't London, wasn't Paris, wasn't Munich, those big cities. It was the little towns that we went through and where you got to experience what life was like for the resident there. So you have that secret charm, that secret little gem in Heber.
Athletes already travel to the Heber Valley from around the world for competitions. The International Biathlon Union held its World Cup at Soldier Hollow in March, and the venue will host the Pan American Mountain Bike Championships this May. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, Timpanogos Valley Theater opened the production of Larry Shue's The Nerd last week. On the phone to tell us more is the production, the director of the production, Robin Lang. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. The production, as I mentioned, opened last Friday. It runs through May 11th. Why don't you start by just telling us about the production, The Nerd?
Okay. It's a play about a returned veteran from the Vietnam War who is an architect. And somebody anonymous had saved his life while he was there. And he finally gets to meet this guy for the first time, and it turns out this guy is a hopeless nerd. So the play kind of unfolds when this guy comes into his life and stirs things up a little bit. It's hilariously funny, and it's got a cast of six people, some very talented actors. I have a couple of guys that are from, in fact, the one of them that is playing the nerd has never been in a play before, but he is an improv actor and a stand-up comedian. And then his counterpart, Willem, is also in the Belvedere's improv comedy group. So they're pretty funny seasons as far as that goes. And then I don't know what else you'd like to know about it. I don't want to give away too much about the play because it's kind of one of those shows that has a twist in it and is really fun to watch unfold.
Okay, so are the actors, are they professional or is just this is community theater?
It's community theater. We do have some seasoned professionals. Bo Walker, who plays Warnick Waldgrave, is actually a radio personality on FM 100 and The Arrow. He has a lot of experience in that. He has done a couple of plays, but mostly on the radio. We have Kirsten Kelly, who has been in several shows, but is not a professional actor. So none of these actors are professionals as far as getting paid all the time. They're all seasoned. They have experience, but they have done community theater. So we also have a child. We have Aisley Smith, who is Nathan Smith's daughter. They are both in the show. Nathan Smith plays Axel Hammond, who is the best friend of Willem, the architect, who kind of is part of this whole thing where the nerd comes in and is driving everybody crazy. We also have Willem's girlfriend, played by Bethany Ward. And she has been in several plays at TVT and is a student at UVU.
Okay. So what's your background?
My background is I have been in theater for about 30 years altogether, probably longer, actually. But I started in middle school and all through high school was a competitor, and mostly my niche was always character acting and humorous and terp. And over the years, I've played several different characters. I also do several different voices. And this is my second directing debut, but I really kind of fell into my niche the first time and realized that this was something that I really wanted to continue to do and pursue.
All right.
I have a passion for it. So,
how much background did you have in directing?
I had directed one play before this one. I did some directing in college and in high school, but not really a full length play or anything like that.
Yeah.
I also have, I've made videos and done some directing there, but nothing major on stage until Barefoot in the Park last October.
All right.
And well, now The Nerd.
Well, it just seems to me that comedy would be more difficult to direct than just a dramatic play, or is that the case?
I believe that there are, it can be more complicated in the way there is a certain finesse to do comedy, especially when it's in a live play. So you have to time out the lines in a way where if the audience laughs, and you have another line coming up, you don't want to say it too quickly. You don't want to get it, you don't want that second line to be buried by laughter. But at the same time, you don't want to wait and anticipate laughs if there aren't going to be any. So there is definitely kind of a finesse that you have to pick up on and learn and have a connection with each audience. And every audience is different. So sometimes an audience will laugh at one thing, and then the next night, the new audience won't laugh at that same joke. So you have to be really careful not to anticipate laughs where they're not going to come. And for me personally, I mean, I've always really enjoyed that part of comedy. I've enjoyed that challenge of making people laugh but not coming across as too thirsty or desperate for laughs, just playing a really good character and getting into your role and hoping that people will enjoy and have that connection with the humor.
Yeah. Now, does the theater company hold auditions for these roles?
Yes.
All right. Did you have few people show up?
We did. We had a ton of women. We usually don't get as many men to come and audition as we would have liked. And in this role, there were four men and two women and a kid. So I had many women try out, but only a handful of men. So I usually have to put a second audition call, which was the case here, to get more guys to come out and try out.
Yeah. What do you look for in an audition?
I for a comedy in particular, I like to look for how natural they feel on stage, how confident they are. It's really hard to pick up on that in a cold reading because I think a cold reading can shake anyone. That's when you just hand them a script and have them read it almost immediately before they've seen it. So I try to look for what they do with what they have there on stage. And then I try to always give a direction. So I'll say, okay, read that line again, but do it really angry, or can you put some more nasal in your nose, or can you pretend that, I'll just try to give them a scenario and see how well they take that direction and redo that line.
All right. So you've been rehearsing since when for this?
Since the beginning of February. So we cast at the end of January, so a few months.
All right.
And the cast has worked really hard. There's a lot of hard timing that goes on with these lines, and I am kind of a, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm kind of one of those people that has to have, I'm like, we got to run it again. We're going to run it again. We're going to run it again until we get it right. And it's always worth it, though. There's always a really good payoff there.
Yeah. Are the actors paid?
They're not. No.
All right. So tell us a little bit about Tippecanoe Valley Theater. You produce how many shows a year?
We usually have a couple of youth shows that we do twice a year. So right now, pretty soon they're going to be holding auditions for the youth shows. I believe Imagine a dragon or something like that, and then a Little Mermaid. They just finished Les Mis, which was a student production, as well as Once Upon a Mattress, which was also a youth production. So we did two major musicals there. And then there's usually one comedy, one or two comedies, and that's kind of my niche right there. So we do about 6-7 shows a year.
Wow. Okay.
I think total.
All right. Yeah. So shows the Nerd Plane Monday, Friday, and Saturday nights. Where and what time are the shows?
The shows are at Tippecanoe's Valley Theater in Heber City, and they start at 7 o'clock on Fridays, Saturdays, and Mondays, like you mentioned. And we have concessions, and we always appreciate the community and all of the support that we get.
All right.
So if you want to come and see something fun, come and see our show.
How much are tickets?
They're $10 too. I didn't even have that written down.
Okay.
They're roughly $10 each. There's premiere seating, which is I think those are the $10 tickets, and then there's $7 for the other seating. So.
Okay. And tickets are available where?
You can go to TippecanoeValleyTheater.com to get those online, or you can just go to the window right before the show starts.
Okay. All right.
So we have a box office there.
So. Anything else you want to tell us?
No, just thank you so much for your time, and thank you for allowing us to promote our show on your show. And we always appreciate it. And I hope to see you there, Leslie. I heard that you're coming on Friday, so that's wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you for your time this morning, Robin. Good luck.
Yes, you too. Okay, thanks.
Robin Lane, again, the director of Tippecanoe's Valley Theater's The Nerd. Well, a benefit concert to support Summit County Search and Rescue will be held this weekend. In the studio with details, I have musician Josh Kelly, I've got Scott Wolf, along with Michelle Eastman and Brett Mickelson with the SAR board. Michelle, maybe start with you and just tell us when, where, and how much.
The concert is this Saturday, May 4th, at the DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch. We're really excited to have about 400 people are attending so far. We're selling tickets on our website. You can go to highstartranch.com or friendsofsar.org to buy tickets. And we are raising funds for the search and rescue team for Summit County.
Okay, how many people can you take? That sounds like a
We can
good
take
show.
Up to 1,000.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That venue's huge.
It's huge.
It is, and it's an amazing venue.
Okay, so this is at the DeJoria Center Amphitheater inside auditorium.
Yep,
in Camas,
exactly.
Utah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, Josh, the concert's being billed as a Nashville-style concert, Writers in the Round. What does that even mean?
So in Nashville, it started with the Bluebird Cafe. They do this thing where they take writers who write all the big hits out of Nashville. They put like three of them together, and these writers get to tell the stories about how the songs were created that are some people's favorite songs. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the biggest hits that come out of Nashville and really everywhere are most of the time written by other people. And so it's a chance for these people to share their stories and share their talent, and for people to get a little bit of an origin story about what the song means and where it even came from. And so that's kind of what we're going to do. I've been doing them for years, and I've got some really great friends involved, and we're going to tell stories and make you laugh and make you cry.
Okay, so in addition to you, who else is going to be playing music?
Dustin Christensen is a good buddy of mine, and he's written huge hits for people out there in the world, and he actually happens to be from Provo, Utah area. So, but Nashville got him. He lives out there now, so every now and then we get him to come back to the motherland, but but it's pretty rare now.
And Scott, you're going to be emceeing the event then?
And singing a little bit. I've been roped into the artisan around, and I'm excited about it. I also know my place. You know, Josh showed up with a guitar that he made himself this
morning. It's because I'm a weirdo.
You're a talented weirdo. I'm going to jump in and sing a little bit, but I'll also be emceeing the night. Grateful to be part of the night. It's an incredible organization in raising money for some really, really remarkable people. Summit County Search and Rescue, an entirely volunteer organization, folks from our community who have day jobs, do not draw salary to do this life-saving work, to be part of a night raising money to make sure they've got the equipment and training they need to save our lives is an honor for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing you all kind of got roped into to doing this. I mean, and doing it on your own time, yeah? To
sure.
make sure that all the money goes to...
That's right. That's right. And yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to take credit for much around here. Knowing a little bit about the work that search and rescue do, you know, to staff this group of people who work for, you know, on a budget of just a few tens of thousands of dollars or something would cost $1 million. And so the fact that they give their time to do this life-saving work for free, take themselves out of their lives, away from their families to save people who've gotten themselves into trouble on the mountains or in our waters is really incredible. And they're yeah. heroes. And so this is a night of music and yeah. And fun celebrating real heroes that live amongst us.
Yeah, and then for you, Josh, I mean, why search and rescue? I mean, there's lots of causes that you could support.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in my town that I live in, I live out there in Camas, and, you know, I've gotten to know this town really well, and, you know, all of the law enforcement and the people out there that give their time and some people on salary, I mean, they keep my kids safe, you know, and... I just want to give back to the community that gives back to me so much and my family. So this was an easy yes for me.
All right. And then for Michelle, I mean, you too. I mean, on the board and a longtime supporter of Search and Rescue. How come?
Well, I've been on the board for a year. I met Brett here and Candace last year on KPCW doing our pledge drive work with High Star Ranch. And I heard more about Search and Rescue and Friends Of, and I was like, I want to be a part of that.
All right. Well, Brett, maybe you can tell us. I know that you folks keep pretty busy during the year, and as we mentioned, it's not your real jobs, right? You're all volunteer.
Well, I'm not part of the team. I'm just raising money for them. But yeah, the two busiest months are January, so winter rescues, and then the hikers in August. So you get a concentration of calls. These aren't nicely spread out throughout the year, making it easy. So there's quite a concentration in those 2 months.
Yeah, so what's happening in January?
The tourists are in town and they're enjoying the snow and they're getting, you know, the best snowmobiles that they can ride in on, and they get way back in the Uintas and then they get in trouble. So, yeah, it's, you know, snowmobiles in the wintertime in the Uintas.
All right. So how much money do you operate on? I mean, where does that money come from currently?
So these are the numbers that I've been given and that I've seen. The actual sheriff, the Summit County Sheriff, is responsible for search and rescue. Within their department, I believe the number is $45,000 to cover training and to cover whatever additional gear they need. They do have one full-time paid lieutenant, Alan Sidaway. So his salary is from the actual sheriff's department, not part of that $45,000, but really it's about $45,000 for training and equipment for the, I believe, 34 men and women that volunteer.
So the money then raised on Saturday, Michelle, you're hoping to do what with? Just to new equipment and things like that? Because, again, they're volunteers. It's not like you're paying them.
Essential equipment and training and the Hagland. We'll talk about that at the event. Yes, and that's a special piece of equipment that you could probably speak to better, Brett.
Just barely. It's a specialized track vehicle that is instrumental in saving people, especially in the wintertime. So we're raising money towards that. But, yeah, as Michelle said, any kind of training. And then everything from, jackets to anything else. So.
Well, this is the thing. You know, when you talk to these folks for a little while, you realize that we're talking about search and rescue going out without essential needs. You know, they're getting trained through these resources, but sometimes they're going out in clothes of their own and having to get pulled out of really dangerous situations sooner than they might would they have the equipment that they need, bunching up together because they've only got X amount of radios. So we're talking about raising funds yeah. for basic needs. This isn't extravagance. This is just providing these real-life heroes to do the search and rescue work they're doing with just basic needs so they can really do their work to the highest effect.
Okay.
And get there quicker and might actually save a life that wouldn't have been saved.
That's right.
So you've got ticket sales It sounds like you also have an opportunity drawing, any kind of silent auction or anything like that?
We are keeping it music oriented. We will have a special raffle or opportunity drawing that we will announce that night. And we have some amazing sponsors. We're pretty blown away by our sponsors. Headline sponsors, Bolt Ranch Store, Intermountain Healthcare, Summit Sotheby's, Blue Sky, Woodward. I mean, I could go on. It's pretty amazing how much support we've gotten so far. But we'd love to see more people fill those seats and come join us.
Yeah, there's plenty of room. There's going to be amazing music, thanks to Josh and Dustin and
yourself.
And me staying out of the way.
This man, by the way, this man has, like, the most ridiculous voice ever. So he sells himself way short.
He set a high bar. But there's a lot of room in the room. So anybody listening, grab three friends and come see us.
Okay. Well, Josh, you did bring your homemade guitar.
I did.
And you were
I hope it's in tune.
You need to play us a song. Are you going to sing harmony here, Scott?
I don't know if you've ever heard this one. I wrote this one for my wife. It's called Loves You Like Me. They might know your name and they might know your face, but I dare say they don't know your heart. They've only seen you all put together, they ain't never seen you fall apart. They don't know who you are. But I get to watch you kissing the curls on the top of our baby girl's head, and I get to hold you while we fall asleep in the middle of a king-size bed. Everyone loves you, but nobody loves you like me. Ooh, everyone loves you, but nobody loves you like me. Nobody loves you like me. To the crowd in the room, you're the life of the party to me. You're my reason to live. I run out of steam where you're just getting started. It's hard not to love your best friend. Everyone loves you, but nobody loves you like me. I get to watch you run through the rain in the parking lot down at the mall, and I can't count the times you've kissed away pain and you pick me back up when I fall. Everyone loves you, but nobody loves you like me. Yeah. Nobody loves you like me. Nobody loves you like me. I watch the shade of your beautiful eyes change with the rise of the sun. I'm the only one. I'm the only one. Yeah, I'm the only. To watch you light up the room down the aisle with that wedding dress on, and I got to dance with the lady that everyone wishes that they could take home. Everyone loved you, but nobody loved you like me. Yeah, everyone loves you, but nobody loves you like me. Nobody loves you like me. Nobody loves you like me.
Yeah.
Boy, that's early to hit those notes.
Yes.
Oh, what a sweet song, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, so.
She's my baby.
Again, tickets available, friendsofsar.org. Again, it's this Saturday night. Doors open.
Doors open at 6:30.
All right, concert starts just after that.
7:30.
Okay. All right.
Awesome.
Well, good luck. Thanks,
See y'all there.
Thank you, guys.
Scott, Josh, Brett, and Michelle.